All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the puck.
To the line, Hughes, Jones!
In this existence.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our house. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Public display is ambushing me.
They slay the dragon.
Here in this existence, existence.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic, delivered to you by DoorDash. Go check out ZephyrEpic.com, promo code HockeySeason, capital H, capital S, all one word, HockeySeason, ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms. Go check them out. Check them out everywhere.
Waiting for you to spell it out there, because guess what? You know what? Remember we talked about the new set of cards that came out?
Yes.
The Zephyr Epic one. It's extended series one and two for this past season.
Yeah.
You know what's in there?
Jack Rathbone?
Jack Rathbone, no. Young Gun card. Is
no
in
way,
there.
Really?
Yes. Okay. So people that, you know, we didn't really know much about the packs. I just recently saw it. I was looking around and I was like, I saw a Jack Rathbone Young Gun card on eBay or something, or yeah, randomly online somewhere. And I was like, whoa, I wonder where that's from. It's from that new extended series one and two. It's kind of like a series three.
Yeah,
and there
is
a Young Gun in there. The hot one is Jack Rathbone.
Yeah. I'll bet it is.
Yeah,
it is. Well, who else debuted toward the end of the year? That's I can't even think of anybody.
But like, it's Jack Rathbone's the only thing that kind of sucks is, like, it's just his headshot. I wanted it to be like him on the ice or something like that in a Canucks jersey, but it's just his headshot.
Him circling back on the 2-on-1 with McDavid and Draisaitl because Myers was up the ice.
Yeah, it's just like a picture from the back, and it's like McDavid and Draisaitl coming in on him on the 2-on-1.
I think I told this joke. Maybe it was a Patreon, maybe it was a past episode, but when we had Aiden McDonough on the show, and he said, oh, by the way, my name's David Quadrelli, joined by Chris Faber here. You probably already knew that. We did get some new listeners, though, over the past weekend. So if you're new here, welcome.
Yeah, if you're new here or if you just came on the past week, you're going to have a, we have a big guest this week as well. Frank Saravalli of DFO is going to join us here.
Saravalli.
Okay. Well, I'm not Saravalli.
Maybe don't say it like that.
Well, that's a problem. See, I'm not doing no Italian accents on the show.
Fair enough.
No problem. If you're new here, thanks for listening. We did our best week ever over the past week on the show
by far.
Listens.
Yeah.
So incredible. We're approaching 200,000 total downloads of the show.
My goodness.
We should hit that, I think, on the weekend, I'm guessing.
Thank you, listeners.
Yes, so very excited.
Let me finish my joke. So we had Aiden McDonough, okay, Canucks prospect, on the show. I probably already told this joke on the episode, but we got new listeners. They want to hear my joke. So,
do they?
Yeah, they do. So he was telling us that his group chat, their Boston Friends group chat with Jack Rathbone and all of his friends, was going absolutely nuts when McDavid and Draisaitl came in on a two on one on him. And McDonough said to us, he's like, I don't even know how it happened. And I wanted to pipe up and be like, well, he was paired with Tyler Myers, so that's how it happened. Because that's literally how it happened. Myers got stuck up the ice and Rathbone was alone. Speaking of which, we will get into the defense pairings and why neither of us think that Rathbone should be playing with Myers. And I don't think we're alone in that. I don't think that's a necessarily hot take at all. But we will get into that. We did have a good weekend, though. A lot of draft coverage. Yeah, on our past episode, we had 3 of the 6 Canucks draft picks, including Aku Koskenvo, who I had on the show. Or is it Koskenvuel? I actually didn't ask him.
Honestly, you're the insider. I heard you. Yeah. You went on Sakaris and Price and had like a 7-minute rant.
Yeah.
And you blew away Matt Sakaris. He was blown away with your rant on Koskenvo. And he's like, look at David Quadrelli running such a tight ship over there, Canucks Army. Knows everything about every prospect. That's the one prospect in the draft that you could have done a 7-minute rant on.
They asked me about Logan Stankoven. They're like, oh, did your heart kind of drop? I'm like, no.
You didn't know what hand Logan Stankoven was.
I was like, no, not really. I was like, the only guy I wanted them to get was Koskenvo.
I know you were joking, but I texted you out, or you texted me after. You're like, who's Logan Stankoven? Coven anyways. I know you were kidding because you've definitely, I don't know if you've seen him play, but you know who he is.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I remember watching quickly Stankoven, the first Giants game I went to.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, pre-pandemic 2020, I guess, the start of 2020. Got to watch him play, and man, he scored a goal as a 16-year-old, and like you could see in warm-ups how good this kid was. He was on the next level. But we don't have to spend much time on Stankoven. Let's get into the Canucks draft. Why don't you just start, you know, do your goalie rant again. Whoever didn't listen to Sakaris and Price on the weekend.
I'm not going to get too into it.
And by the way, you impressed Cam Robinson as well quite a bit.
I impressed Ian Clark.
Okay, well, so just go off with your goalies for a bit.
Hands down,
I'll zone out.
Coolest moment of my career. Got to interview Ian Clark. That story's up at Canucks Army. Hands down, best interview I've ever done. Coolest thing I've ever done. I'm thinking I might ask Canucks PR if I can put that interview behind the paywall on the Patreon, because obviously we can't have him on the podcast. That's against the rules. But you know, I like talking to Ian. Ian liked talking to me. Texted me after, said, look forward to chatting again. And I don't know, coolest moment of my career, because he just, like, I don't know. You know how much I like talking goalies. I like talking to Kevin Woodley about them. People on the podcast know that. We've talked for like 50 minutes on a podcast. And I was talking to Ian, and it was pretty crazy. We just, like, hearing him talk goalies, it's insane. Like, you read most of what he said. Most of what he said was included in that article. Talked a lot about Mikey DiPietro. Told me that he wouldn't have drafted Mikey DiPietro if he was with the Canucks when they drafted him. He wouldn't have drafted him. And he said, and that would have been a miss on my part. Because he's like, I love Mikey DiPietro now, but he wouldn't have drafted him. So we got talking about technical stuff like that. And it was a good interview. I have a lot of quotes from him that didn't get used in that story. So maybe I'll periodically tell them on the Patreon. But yeah, sure, that was one of them. He said he wouldn't have drafted DiPietro.
Let's talk about Koskenvo, because you talked about it with Clark a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that people don't like about Koskenvo.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what's going on with Koskenvo. So when a lot of people look at him, and, you know, JD Burke was playing Warzone with him last night, talking to him about Koskenvo, and he was saying, like, a lot of people don't think Koskenvo is a good goaltender, and, you know, his U18s really did tank his value. Like, a lot of teams were projecting him, like even Todd Harvey, director of amateur scouting with the Canucks, said that they thought they'd have to get Koskenvo in the third round. So once they lost their second and third round pick, they probably thought, okay, this is, we're done here. Like, we're sorry, they're first and third. There's no way we're getting Koskenvo. So when they were able to get him in the fifth, or sorry, their fourth, my bad. When they got him in the
fifth,
No, that's what I'm saying. They didn't have a fourth, so they were probably thinking they wouldn't get him. When they got him in the fifth, they were ecstatic to get him. Ian Clark really, really likes Koskenvo, and basically for the same reasons that I do, the same reasons that I've been outlining for the past past few months in articles on the show. The hands are poor. If you listen to the interview with Aku, I talked to him about that, and he agrees that that's, you know, that's something he needs to work on. And another thing is he's not really calm in the crease. He's very similar to Askarov in the fact that he's just jumping around in the crease a lot, and he makes these five alarm saves that make him look fantastic, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, look at this guy, look at his explosiveness. And that's fair. He does have great explosiveness. He has great athleticism, but there's no structure to his game. So for an NHL scout, they're seeing that and saying, my gosh, okay, like what's going on here? But for Ian Clark, that's the exact type of goaltender he really likes. And, you know, he even said to me, he's like, look at what I did in Columbus. He's like, we had Sergei Bobrovsky, a guy with no tools, but we brought a cohesive package to his game. It worked out. Then I got Jonas Korpisalo. Did the same thing with him. And then he goes, then we drafted Merzlikins and did the same thing. Like, you know, he wasn't bragging, but
like, I gotta, how can I gotta you cut not? In here. Like, what's the confidence level from Clark like? Because from what we've heard,
he's very confident. He's very no BS. Nice guy, like super nice. It was, you know, I didn't feel like intimidated talking to him. He's super nice. And, you know, it was funny. He even, because we disagreed on something, and I'm gonna go out on a limb and say he might have a better idea than I do.
Yeah, but I'm going on that limb.
Yeah, exactly.
Too.
But he says he's like, because he disagreed with me, but then he also was like, yeah, but who knows if I'm right? Because we all evaluate goaltenders with a different set of eyes. He's like, you, Curtis Sanford, Dan Kluche, we all have different sets of eyes. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure my...
What's your name doing in there?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yeah, my analysis on goaltenders is very similar to yours. But he did give me mad props for calling the Koskenvo pick. Because I was like, I was telling him, I was like, yeah, I had bragging rights over Woodley. Because I was texting him before the draft saying, this is a Clarkie pick. Like, they're gonna pick Koskenvo.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was happy to call that pick. And it was funny how much I knew about this one prospect that the Canucks drafted.
Yeah, it was
because if they didn't draft him and people asked me about other goaltenders, I would have had to do research. But Koskenvo, I already knew everything there is to know about him, except for the fact that he's going to Harvard in 22-23. I got that wrong. But
well, I mean, that was kind of interesting too, because he hasn't graduated high school yet.
No, hasn't graduated. No, he's in grade 11.
Interesting. But yeah, enjoyed the interview. Enjoyed the interview with him. And yeah, I think that's enough time on the goalie. You had your run.
Absolutely.
Are you happy with your run there?
Absolutely.
Okay. It wasn't quite as long as the one on Sakaris and Price on the weekend, but nope. It was close. We'll touch on other players in the draft. What did you think about Klimovic, the second round pick? That was that's a big swing. I think that was the thing that we talked about a lot. Big swing, a lot of talent. But when he showed up, you know, on a lot of people's draft boards, was after his performance at one tournament. One tournament at the U18s where he scored more than a goal per game. Had the big hat trick as well against Switzerland, looked good when he was on the power play, could really shoot the puck, but then it had a lot of people diving into Belarus videos, and like, I couldn't find anything on the second league in Belarus. I was able to find him in the first league, in the first tier. I've watched him play in the first tier of the Belarus league, but he's already at camp in the KHL, and he's already scoring goals and putting up assists in exhibition games with Dynamo Minsk right now. I'll talk about the quotes in a second here, because I did hear from Klimovic, and I'll read the quotes in a second. But your initial thoughts on them drafting, you know, taking a big swing on a guy who a lot of people had in the third or fourth round.
Yeah, I had never heard of this prospect before.
You edited my articles about him.
Yeah, well, he's no Koskenvo. I'll just say that. No. Okay, so I obviously default to scouts on this one, and you know, the opinion's mixed. Like, Reese Jessop really likes him, Cam Robinson doesn't. I think JD Burke was another guy who really liked the pick, or did like the pick. I don't know if JD really likes anything.
No, I talked to JD about Klimovic before the draft, and he was saying third, fourth round.
Well, he also thinks Koskenvo sucks, so who knows?
Who is JD Burke anyways?
Yeah, what does he know?
It's non-elite prospects, JD Burke over there.
As I like to call it, not elite prospects.
That's why I just
unathletic.
Said.
and the unathletic and anti-Canucks army.
You are just taking down everyone.
Some people are going to get some get that reference. Not everybody, no. But some people will get that reference.
Clown army.
Clown army. That's another reference. What were we talking about? Yes, this prospect. Okay, so off to a hot start in the KHL. Like I saw you posting those today. I was killing myself laughing because everybody's freaking out. I'm refreshing my feed. Everybody's like, what is this organization doing? Like, they're going all in right now, which we'll get to soon. But they're going all in and this and that. And why are they buying out Holtby? Why are they doing this? Like, it's just mistake after mistake with this regime. And then I look and it's just Faber being like, Klimovich just scored, and it's like all these gifs. I got like just
dirty,
so funny.
Dirty Instagram videos from behind the net of Klimovich's goal from like doing some crazy digging. Found a good source for Klimovich this year with Dynamo Mints. Already have been in contact with the team and have heard back. So like this is a big step up. And that I actually want to address this quickly right off the top. People are worried about him playing in the KHL because, oh, he's not going to get minutes. He's going to get that treatment Colson. Like Pod Colson. Very, very different organization. If this is the organization that he's going to play with the KHL, this is not SKA. This is not SKA. This isn't going to be, you know, you need to sign with us, otherwise we're not playing you. You need to be long-term with us in the KHL, otherwise we're not going to play. This team just wants to be able to compete. Okay, this team doesn't have the money like SKA. This team, Dynamo Minsk, is just a team that's trying to, you know, keep up with the other KHL teams, and they will play players if they help them. If they help them and they perform, they're going to play him. And already a good start for him, a goal and a primary assist on his first exhibition game in the KHL. He's practicing with the team. I just want to read the quotes from Klimovich about finding out that he was drafted by the Vancouver Canucks. And by the way, there's a line in here, which is like the most Russian training thing that I love about it. So from Klimovich here, very cool. I've never given up. I've worked. I've always strived in that direction. It's justified. I immediately broke down and ran to the house. I think he was talking about the fan house where his family's actually staying for this camp, where my father was already waiting for me to share the emotions from this event with him. This is my favorite part of it. I found out after our mountain training. So they were training on a mountain because that's what the KHL does. On the way back, the guys watched the broadcast from their phones. Then in the locker room, the guys were the first to notice and show, Klim, you were drafted by Vancouver.
Fantastic.
From the mountain. So he was drafted while training on a mountain. How awesome is that? How KHL is that? I love it.
It's
so
like the gross grind, the prospects.
That's
come
what
do
a
it.
Lot of people are saying.
He's going to have a leg up. When they bring that back, he's going to have a leg up.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And yeah, it's... You know, a lot of people are expecting him to be in the queue, but if he does well on this trial, there's positives and negatives for him going to the QMJHL or going to the KHL, right? I mean, if he goes to either of those leagues, he goes to the queue, probably plays against a lot weaker competition, obviously. Gets to round out his game a little bit more, but if he goes to the K and has success in the K, that is, I think, if you're one step away from making the jump to professional hockey in North America, there's nothing better than having success in the KHL because that's a better league than the AHL. If he has success, score goals, and puts up assists in the KHL, he's going to do it at the AHL, guaranteed. Yeah. Or like guaranteed. You saw Reed Boucher's numbers fall off from the AHL to the KHL. It was a struggle for him to score in the KHL compared to the AHL. I mean, he still put up points, but not at the same level as in the AHL. So if he's able to score and put up points as, you know, an 18-year-old kid in the KHL this season, he's fast-tracked to come in North America, man. So if he doesn't go to the queue, don't everyone freak out because everyone's worried about, you know, the experience that we just had with Pod Colson in the KHL. If Klimovich is going to go, if he's going to play and Dynamo Minsk wants him there, like, they're going to play him a lot. They're going to play him a lot. It's not going to be a similar situation to Pod Colson at all. This is a guy that they're not just going to bench because he's not staying. You know, unless he ends up getting traded to CSKA or SKA, don't worry about it. This is a different KHL team in a very different situation. Other guys that the Canucks drafted.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, just we'll close out here before we go to Saravalli, but just your thoughts on the late round swings that they took, because it looks like that they kind of followed the recipe of let's just go for guys with huge upside at the last part of the draft.
Yeah, you know what was interesting, and this is kind of why like I was, my theory going into the draft for the Vancouver Canucks was that we all know the Canucks have had success in Sweden, right? Yeah. That's something where they go back to the well every year. Victor Pettersson a couple years ago. All the guys that they drafted this year. But this year especially, a lot of players in the J20 National League are drafted into the NHL. It's a very good Swedish league for players under 20. That league got shut down this year We know that because of Victor Pearson. We talked about it earlier. So my idea was like, I think that's where the Canucks are going to go with a lot of their picks. And they did. They went with three of them. They went with Myron Berg, Gabrielsson, and Forsell, because all three of those players, unlike Victor Pearson, who couldn't find hockey for a while and ended up, you know, landing in hockey E10 late, those three players in the J20, they all found teams immediately. Like right off the bat when their season was over, boom, Forsell's in the SHL.
Yeah.
Boom, the other two are in hockey E10. So that was the interesting thing about Forsell. They picked him in the seventh round. Out of the three prospects they picked, he was the only one who got SHL games. That's why I love the Forsell pick at where they got him in the seventh round. I saw some people tweeting about it that they were like, people were making, there was a long couple threads that I saw about people selecting their favorite pick from the whole draft in each round. Forsell was showing up multiple times in the seventh round. Like, this is, he was one of the youngest players in this most recent draft. We just had him on the show on the weekend. Excellent kid. I think my favorite interview that we had on the show this past weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun to deal with him. Just a great kid overall. And, you know, the fact that he was able to even crack an SHL lineup last year. And, you know, it's funny, like Victor Pearson, everyone's like, oh, he got, you know, I hear other podcasts or other people on radio talk about, well, it was nice for Pearson to get some games in the SHL last year. Cause if you look at elite prospects, if you don't watch him play and you just look at elite prospects, you're like, oh, look at Victor Pearson. He got 8 games in at the SHL this year. The dude played 4 shifts in his whole SHL time. He played 1 game. He played a minute and 20 seconds in those 7 or 8 games, whatever it says on Elite Prospects. So don't look on Elite Prospects and act like you know what Victor Pearson did this year.
Not Elite Prospects.
No, exactly. Here we go again. So, but Forsell gets in. He plays 3 minutes and 33 seconds in 1 game. Looks like a bat out of hell. That's what I asked Todd Harvey. Like, did it look like he was playing with his head on fire? And he said, yeah. And I just found that he's going to report to SHL camp this coming month, like, or in August. We're not in August yet. But in August, he's going to report to SHL camp. Wouldn't shock me to see him get a chance to really crack that roster, be a fourth line guy, you know, do something similar to what Arvid Kosmar did last year and be an impact guy on the fourth line. They like Forsell. He's grown a lot in the past couple of years. He's my favorite pick of the draft for the Vancouver Canucks. I've watched a lot of Myron Berg lately. There's a lot to like about the potential with Myron Berg, but man, there's some things that you really don't like. And I'm going to write this in an article here pretty soon. A lot of people are like, oh, you're too positive about a lot of these prospects. A lot of people have told me that. And I'm positive about a lot of things because I don't want to knock 17, 18-year-old kids. There's a lot to grow. But, man, the thing about Myron Berg that I didn't like is, like, when he's skating up the ice with the puck or getting into a two-on-one situation, which he does a lot. He jumps up a lot. But when he's skating back to defend, there's not a lot of effort there. And I wonder if that's because it was in hockey E10 and it's a league that's
not really...
It's like Pearson.
That's what he said. He's like, I'm too good for this league.
That's what Pearson told us. That, you know, I think that those guys look down on the hockey E10 league. Mm. We had Alexa on. What did she tell us? There's 50 or 46 teams in that league.
What?
It's literally just a step up from, like, men's league hockey. Like, it's barely a pro league. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they fall. Hugo Gabrielsson is going to land in Allsvenskan next year. I think that's a good spot for him. Defensemen take a little bit longer to develop. He's going to play in the Swedish second division and get a lot of opportunity to play there. It'll be fun to watch him develop. But, man, like, mark my words right now. If Forsell starts in the SHL next year, if that's where he starts his season next year, the hype has to start getting real about this kid. One of the youngest players in the 2021 draft, picked in the seventh round by the Vancouver Canucks. Forsell feels like the pick for the Canucks that, you know, is going to be the one that looks pretty good down the road, even if it's just for value what they get. I don't know if he's going to be an NHL player, but right now, that's an excellent pick in the seventh round. Lockhart, don't really know much about him yet. I've watched a little bit of him play, reached out, see if we can get in contact with him, but we'll see what happens with that. He'll be in the OHL next year. Didn't really have anything to go off this past season because of OHL games being canceled. But I do think he played in the PBHH tournament as well. So I'll try and get some film on him and get some updates. I'm going to have an article on each of these prospects.
Everything is at CanucksArmy.com. Like, go check us out.
And we'll have more on the prospects report. I just put it out in an article as well. Just a ton of stuff about prospects that are reporting. Kosmar is going to report, obviously, to his SHL camp in August. Who else? McDonough's going back in September. He said that on this show. Who else? Who has another prospect?
Okay, let's just get to Saravalli. It's okay,
okay, okay. Well, I got more prospects. Why don't you do?
We'll get an article out where you just prime everybody and you say where every single prospect's playing this
year.
Okay,
sounds good.
There you go.
I'm getting giddy. It's that time of the year. I know.
I gotta pull you back a bit. It's like me when I get talking about goalies and talking to Ian Clark.
All right, so get going on.
We'll cut to some ads from our sponsors right now, and then we will get to our conversation with Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravalli. So keep it locked, keep it loaded on the Canucks Conversation.
All right, folks, that's right. We got a new ad finally here for Parallel 49 Beer. You want to get down to the street kitchen, folks. It's more than just a street kitchen now. Now it is a full-on beer gardens. Absolutely beautiful. You've seen Quads and I tweeting about it. The food's amazing. A ton of beers on tap. Quads as well. You've had not only beers, but what other drinks did you like there?
Had the Muddler's Pink Lemonade. That was very good. You need to go get the food, though. The food at the Parallel 49 Street Kitchen, ridiculous. What did we eat that one day? Poutine? Cheeseburger. Well, I ate it all. Waffle fries. And then we got those Korean barbecue wings.
Yeah, the spicy chicken burger. That's my go-to. But delicious. What you do, a little trick for everyone, you swap out the jalapenos for their pickled cucumbers. Very, very good. Highly recommend that. That's down at 1950 Triumph Street off an East Van. That's Parallel 49 at 1950 Triumph Street. Check them out in East Van and go down and try some beers and be sure to get some food down on that beautiful patio.
The pandemic and a slow economy are making it tough on a lot of people to find steady, good-paying work. But one industry is bucking that trend. Construction companies are hiring and need more workers than ever before. Upload your resume to icba.ca and get noticed. With more than 3,000 employers on our ICBA team, our employment network can connect you to businesses crewing up for the 2021 construction season. Trades jobs that pay well, offer excellent benefits, invest in safety training, and give a firm career foundation. Check out icba.ca/jobs.
Squish Beverage, my new favorite drink of the summer. Absolutely crushable. The right drink to bring down to the beach, the right drink to bring down to the river, camping, whatever you're doing this summer. Squish is the beverage for you. They have original hard seltzers and a bunch of different flavors, but the lemonade ones, those are my favorite, Quads.
Me too. I can drink more than one of those. They're crushable.
Which is good. So when you go down to the beach, you're bringing how many?
More than one.
More than one.
Unlike last time.
Absolutely. This is the hard seltzer for you. This is the hard seltzer for summer. Go out and try Squish. You can find the original flavors of hard seltzer at BC liquor stores. But if you want to do a little bit of digging, that's where you're going to find the lemonades, my favorite. And you can find those at private liquor stores all across British Columbia.
All right, guys, very pleased to be joined now by Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravalli. Frank, how are you doing today?
Quads, Chris, what's up?
Not much. We're enjoying a beautiful Vancouver day, and it's a busy day for us here in Vancouver. So we really appreciate you taking the time. We know your phone's ringing off the hook right now, so we really appreciate you taking 20 minutes to chat with us. So I guess we'll just start there. Like, the news out of Vancouver that we've been hearing, there's been lots going on today, but I guess the main one that a lot of people are talking about is the Connor Garland contract. So I just want to get your reaction to that.
Well, I think it's a nice fit for both sides. Look, Connor Garland has been playing on short money deals, and all Garland has done really since he broke into the NHL is produce. Doesn't matter that he's 5'10", 170 pounds. He's produced at every single level he's played at. Go back to his days with the Boston Junior Bruins almost 10 years ago. He played on the team with Jack Eichel, outscored him both in points and goals that year. Goes to the Quebec League, 30-plus goal guy twice there. And since he's gotten to the NHL, that's all he's done is score. You know, and he's a guy that just brings his lunch pail, brings his shovel, and he's ready to dig in. And so to get him at 495, I think his ARB number was probably somewhere close to $5.5 million based on his production. And they get a deal that is, you know, some nice term on it for Garland at and some nice security at almost $25 million. And moving forward, they get a guy who can significantly outplay the contract over the course of it.
Now, the other thing we've been following quite closely is the situation with Braden Holtby. Now, we heard that there was trades going on and that there was always teams that wanted the Canucks to retain salary, and it didn't seem like that was something they want to do. They go ahead and buy him out. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, in some ways, like, look, they did try, and they couldn't find a trade partner because, you're right, teams wanted the Canucks to retain and by that point, it doesn't really make any sense for them. That kind of defeats the purpose, right? Because the buyout is so inexpensive for the first year. So just a $500,000 cap charge heading into next season. Yes, you need to fill the role of Braden Holtby and bring someone in. Maybe someone like Yaroslav Halak makes a lot of sense. But they couldn't find that trade partner, and so now they needed to head in another direction, and this was the time to do it. The clock was ticking before free agency opened.
And Frank, we've seen a lot of moves over the past week here for the Vancouver Canucks, and obviously a lot of them are in the direction of win right now when, you know, sort of sacrifice the future a little bit. We talk about it a ton here in the Vancouver market, but you're outside of the market. What are your thoughts kind of looking in at the moves that the Canucks have made, you know, acquiring OEL, getting Garland, buying out Holtby? Like, is it just, like, what's the vibe, I guess, outside of Vancouver on what the Canucks are doing?
What it speaks to me is that there's significant pressure on the Canucks to win next season. Because if you look at the way the trade was structured in moving out the guys that they did to Arizona, all those guys were on expiring contracts. And so they really only had to get through one more year of some cap pain with Beagle, Roussel, and Erickson, and then they were in the clear. And so what they've done is they've made the team unquestionably better in the near term, and I think the Connor Garland, if you were to separate the trade into sort of different parts, Connor Garland for a first makes a lot of sense. And then what you're doing is you're taking on Oliver Ekman-Larsson in the long term and hoping that his career can bounce back really in exchange and kicking, you know, some of the cap concerns that you have down the road a little bit with Ekman-Larsson's deal. And so they get a little bit of help in that the Coyotes were willing to retain a little bit. And that was really the push. You know, dating back to last offseason, was the Coyotes weren't really willing to retain much on Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And so the fact that they get Ekman-Larsson at 7.26 instead of 8.25, I think that makes a difference moving forward. It lessens some of the sting a little bit. And I think you're hoping that this is a guy that, you know, can really be rejuvenated, you know, coming off a year in which obviously the Coyotes didn't have the success that they wanted. He did personally. And then also the sort of longstanding, I think it's unfair to call it a feud, but there was clearly no love lost between Ekman-Larsson and coach Rick Tocchet. And so Tocchet moved on. The Coyotes haven't built a winner in the time that Ekman-Larsson's been there, and he wanted a change of scenery. And now he goes to a place in Vancouver where, you know, maybe does the Sedin connection and them being back in the organization help get Ekman-Larsson back on the right foot?
Now, we talk about the flat cap era, and the prediction is that the cap will go up before Ekman-Larsson's deal expires. And, you know, there's the TV deal and all that. And now, I know this is a loaded question, Frank, because a lot of it depends on, you know, COVID variants and kind of if we actually get out of this and all that sort of stuff. But when the cap goes up eventually, I guess, number one, what do you think an appropriate timeline for that is? And two, how much do you think it will go up by?
I think, well, look, it all depends on the revenue projections, and I need to bust out my spreadsheet in order to give you a more accurate answer, because the one part of the equation that we don't know yet is an exact tally on the amount of debt that the players have to pay back to owners. I know it was north of $1 billion, and so the 20% that was lopped off this year to go to owners, you know, was the idea was to make a dent on that. And then, you know, the revenue projection for next season as well, I think it's around $4.8 billion. And so, I think there's a chance that it goes up $1 million next offseason to 82.5, but that's really kind of the maximum that it could go up to.
And Frank, we got a lot of rumors going around. Obviously, they haven't really died since the season ended about Nate Schmidt. What's the latest that you're hearing on Nate Schmidt and possible trade rumors here?
I think the Canucks have tried. They've tried really hard to find Nate Schmidt a landing spot. And I think what they've run into is really the no trade list that Nate Schmidt has. He submits a 10-team no list. And I think the teams that have had interest in Schmidt sort of have all been on that no trade list. My sense is that they're mostly Canadian teams. I think, you know, the Winnipeg Jets were a team that had reportedly expressed interest in Schmidt and, you know, maybe had a deal close to being worked out, and that he turned that down. I mean, he wouldn't be the first player to say no to Winnipeg. And so, you know, I think there are other Canadian teams that are in pretty similar situations that Nate Schmidt wants to stick to his list in that case.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a little bit tough here, especially after you see, I guess, you know, 2 second-round picks come back from Winnipeg there for Dylan. I mean, that feels like a big, I guess, big return for Dylan when I think what we've seen for rumors about Nate Schmidt and his possible return. Do you think that that trade affects what Schmidt's value is, or do you think because of that no trade list, it might be a little bit lower than what Dylan went for?
No, I think it would be lower because the destinations are limited and everyone knows that. That and also the other option would be that teams would want the Canucks to retain salary. And again, that kind of defeats the purpose. Not surprised with the return on Dylan. He's actually a pretty underrated player on the league. Almost $4 million cap hit for each of the next 3 seasons. And he's a guy that's so incredibly well respected around the league. I've mentioned this on our DFO Rundown podcast. Guys are like literally clamor to be his D partner because he makes life easier for them. And so he's a guy that was in demand. And I've been saying all along, if the Caps were going to be trading one of their defensemen, you know, it wouldn't be Nick Jensen. It wouldn't be Kempney coming off the injury. It wouldn't be Justin Schultz, that it would most likely be Dylan because the interest would be there. And of course, we end up seeing that happen. So I'm not surprised at all that the 2 first-round picks were the price for Dylan.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it kind of got Canucks fans talking quite a bit because I think a lot of people see the value in Schmidt and what he could be if he's in the right environment. And I think that's the part that kind of threw everybody off a little bit. But if they do end up moving Nate Schmidt, I mean, they got to bring in someone on that right side to play defense. We've heard the rumors about Luke Shen, but are you hearing any other names connected to the Vancouver Canucks as we're one day away from free agency opening now?
Honestly, I haven't. I you know, when you're looking at the right D market, it's, you know, understandably a little bit thinner than the left side. But the funny thing about this year and the way that it's played out is a bunch of teams have actually been looking for left shot D this year. Calgary is one. The Florida Panthers are another. The Philadelphia Flyers are another. They end up with Keith Yandle. So it's mostly been for a look on the left side, oddly enough, this summer. And the Canucks are one of those teams that's looking for someone on the right side. I do think the deal with Shen will materialize. You know, I'm just looking through my list here of the guys that could be on the move on the right side. I wonder, does a guy like Cody Ceci make some sense? I think there's been some interest in Yanni Hackenpah as well, not necessarily in Vancouver, but around the league. And, you know, people might snicker at the idea of Cody Ceci, but it's interesting how the conversation about Ceci changed because the expectation changed. And I think it all goes back to how we view players now in the salary cap world. Fans determine opinion based on how much a guy is paid. And, you know, when he was making $4 million, you know, fans were all over Cody Ceci. And then at $1.25 million, everyone's saying, oh, this guy is actually pretty good. And so I think Cody Ceci is trying to get some term. I wonder if he could be potentially a fit, you know, for what Vancouver is looking for. And again, just spitballing, but you know, some of the other guys on the list here, Zach Bogosian isn't going to Canada. Travis Hamonic, been there, done that. You know, Tucker Poolman, does he make any sense? I think he's a guy that actually has a lot of interest around the league as well, coming off of his year and 3-year run in Winnipeg. So the upper echelon, you know, market, it's there's not really a lot of D out there other than Dougie Hamilton on the right side.
And another spot where the Canucks need to add some NHL players of value is on their fourth line, you know, even bottom six area, if you can slide one into a third line role. It feels like a lot of these RFAs that didn't get qualifying offers, there's going to be some options out there, some pretty solid options as well. And now with the ability to bury a contract of 1.125, I believe it changed to this year in the AHL and not have any cap implications, is it going to be an interesting kind of market for these guys that are bottom six forwards? Like, are we going to see a lot of these guys kind of move, especially after seeing what the qualifying offers have, you know, kind of resulted in a lot of players becoming UFAs? Is it going to be pretty active, do you think, day one for these fourth line type of players?
Yeah, I think it is going to be active, really active. So You know, I think that number kind of teams certainly have that in mind. I mean, even looking towards like, you know, Pittsburgh ended up at the last minute qualifying Zach Aston-Reese, for instance. And I know a lot of teams would have had interest, but like, you know, I think the hope in some cases was, does a guy like that make it to UFA? Because he is a pretty talented player that produces. And so can you get him on a deal that makes sense? Like, does he get to 1.6, 1.7, 1.8? Can he get a couple-year deal? So, you know, those are all things that teams are looking for. I can tell you that, like, for instance, among the guys that weren't qualified, someone like David Kampf, for instance, in Chicago, like, that guy would have lots of interest on the open market. I'm not totally convinced that all the RFAs that weren't qualified will actually make it to the market, because just because you aren't issued a qualifying offer doesn't mean that you're a free agent immediately. You still have to get to that 12 noon window Eastern time on Wednesday. And, you know, I can tell you that some of those teams that didn't qualify are going to be circling back to players saying, hey, would you be willing to take this or that? Sort of in the last-ditch effort.
And Jim Benning has talked about it in the past couple of weeks here, about potentially bringing in a Russian to help Vasily Podkolzin come to North America. One of those RFAs that didn't receive a qualifying offer, Evgeny Svechnikov, do you think that that's a guy who's going to, you know, draw some interest here in free agency, even though he didn't really have a lot of success at the NHL? He did score at the AHL, you know, had some spurts of good offense in the NHL, but I'm wondering what type of value do you think a player like him has?
Honestly, I haven't heard much about Svechnikov. Not to say that there isn't interest, but he's one of those guys that was sort of up and down last year, taxi squad guy, in and out of the lineup. And you're right, he has produced a little bit in the AHL, but not even really enough to the point where, aside from 4 years ago, that he's really moved the needle in a significant way. And so, you know, again, I think there's a whole list of plug-and-play players that are sort of in that same category that there will be interest. It just depends on where they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to follow. I just found that it was interesting that Benning wanted to, like, go out there and say that they were looking for a Russian. It just felt like, it feels like a landing spot, I guess, maybe. But like you mentioned, yeah, not a lot of interest in the NHL, I guess, after his performance.
By the way, just wanted to mention one other thing. I know the Canucks are pretty set with Quinn Hughes and what he does. Mm-hmm. Does Tyson Barry make any sense on the right side?
Well, I don't know if they need to go that direction as a partner for him. I think they got so many good puck-moving offensive left-side defensemen that Barry doesn't really fit, especially with Myers as the other right-shot guy. Like, you're bringing, like, it feels like it would be all, like, offensive guys back there. I think it'll be interesting to see, but I don't know about the money as well. What are you kind of expecting for a Barry deal anyways, though?
I think what Tyson Barry had on the table and probably still does have on the table is some sort of compromise with you know, term and dollars. Like, what I had heard was somewhere in like the 3-year range at like 5.25, and then that number can sort of move either way, where if it goes to 4 years, maybe the AAV gets pushed down a little bit. If it goes to 2 years, then the AAV climbs up a little bit. So I think there's been some flexibility there. I think he's had interest in just, you know, the Oilers got some increased flexibility with the buyout of James Neal. I think they're still looking around on the goalie market, still trying to move Koskinen. But, you know, they have the cap space in order to keep a guy like Barry. The question is, do they ultimately do it, or is that money better spent elsewhere?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know if the fit in Vancouver makes a lot of sense to us anyways, but I got my final question here for you, Frank. Just wanted to ask about the expansion draft day a little bit. You obviously blew up the Twitter world quite a bit. Looked like you were having some fun. People are definitely enjoying what you were able to do on that day. How much fun was that day for you, just kind of, you know, breaking down every expansion draft pick it felt like out there?
It was fun. Look, I mean, every day doing this is fun. It doesn't matter how little or how big the story it is that you're breaking. You know, to me, I got a lot of heat, and times, to be totally honest, like, it was like uncomfortable, not the heat, but just the attention that it got.
Right.
You know, I'm just here trying to do my job, and, you know, last week is in the past. It's last week, and I'm just moving forward to try and break as much as I can. You know, you're only as good in this business as your next scoop. So, you know, continue to try and, you know, pound the pavement, bug people for information, and try and also be respectful, because that was the other part of it. It's, you know, a lot of people saw it as me ruining the Seattle Kraken party and all that. To me, that, you know, obviously that's not my intention. My goal is just to, you know, be accurate and be on time, and you know, the rest of it sort of just goes as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of having fun on the job, you've been doing a lot of great work at DFO. So just before we wrap up here, just for our listeners that maybe don't know exactly what's going on at DFO, just go ahead and tell them.
Yeah, we're building something awesome, Quads, and excited to have you guys be part of it. You know, it's one of those things where we're going to be hiring some awesome people this summer, building a team out. We've got a vision for some new shows that we want to do, produce new content and on all the different platforms, be first in breaking news and storytelling, and, you know, really drive content to what's already been a great site. I mean, Daily Faceoff has a ton of visitors as it is for people interested in the latest lineup information and starting goalies. And, you know, it's funny just telling some people around the league where I was heading, they're like, oh, I use that site, but like they kind of didn't know that they did. And so now, if we can become just a destination for people to go to for content as well, then I think we'll be able to build something really special.
Absolutely. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. And a massive thank you to all of our sponsors. And of course, Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff for joining us. Fun conversation. And we're going to get into some more things that we talked about with him there. A lot of rumors right now, Chris.
First of all,
I muted you. Say that again.
First of all, all right, I guess second of all, since my first one didn't come in, Frank, you know Frank had some fun on the expansion draft.
Yeah.
You know he had a lot of fun.
I felt bad when he said he didn't say it rattled him, but what he said was like he was uncomfortable with how much attention it got. Like that, I would be too.
20,000 followers I saw that day.
Yeah, 30.
30?
30.
Okay.
Yeah. I got the report from Downtown Jay.
Downtown Jay with their Twitter report.
What a gem. I just want Jay to come on the show more often because I get to talk to him a lot more. But it's fun when Jay comes
on the
show.
What we need to ask Jay about is Oodle Noodle.
Oodle Noodle, man.
What do you know about Oodle Noodle? I just saw him post the other day.
You know what? They do a lot of good stuff in the community.
I just saw that.
I was like, whoa, holy cow. Like, they donated so much food to local food banks.
It was like 260,000 pounds or something.
Yeah, it was something crazy.
Maybe 26,000.
Yeah, and they're doing something right now with the Edmonton Indigenous.
260,000 meals.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
260,000 pounds.
That's not that far off.
I don't think a pack of noodles weighs a pound. I think it's less than that. Anyway,
I don't want to start weighing. Yes. We had enough with the bear on the fence debate. Yes. We don't need to get into how much a noodle weighs.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of good stuff, though, in the Edmonton community. They're doing stuff with the local Indigenous Two-Spirit community. I saw Jay posting about that, which is good. You love to see that. So, Oodle Noodle. Little shout out to Oodle Noodle, who you can't order in Vancouver because they're not in Vancouver. If you're ever in Edmonton, that's...
Hit them up on DoorDash. They got to be on DoorDash in Edmonton.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go check them out.
Tons of news. Let's get into
it. Tons
of
news.
Where do you want to even start?
Let's start with the poll question, Chris. Yeah. I don't know if you pull that up because the Our Business, Your Business Here poll question was, do you want Luke Shen to return to the Vancouver Canucks? Chris, when Luke Shen finished his stint with the Canucks and when that one-year deal signed, do you remember I texted you last offseason and I said, I'm going to write an article about how the Canucks need to target Luke Shen and they need to bring him back. And you scoffed at me. You scoffed at me.
I don't know about scoffed.
You scoffed at me. You were like, because I said he would significantly upgrade their third pair from what they had. At the time, that was like Brogan Rafferty and Ollie Levy. They hadn't signed Travis Hamonic at the time when I wanted to write that, and I stand by it. So to see him coming back, and a lot of people are saying, he's not a, you can't seriously think he's a top six defenseman. Like, he can't play on a bottom. I'm like, what? You don't think Luke Shen, who just won two cups with the Tampa Bay Lightning, played on their bottom pairing at times? I know he was their seventh defenseman, but I don't know if you've looked.
18
sorry.
18 games in
exactly,
the two seasons.
Exactly. So what I'm saying, I don't know if you, you know, I know they spend a similar amount and they're similar cap hit, but man, the Canucks aren't the Tampa Bay Lightning, just so you guys know. Like, that's just how it is. Tampa's 13th forward could probably play on the Canucks' third line. Well, maybe not now, but last year, yeah. And their defense isn't much better than it was last year. So I'm just saying, you bring in Shen on a third pairing, sheltering Rathbone. Like, you bring Quinn Hughes' personal assassin, as our friend Wyatt Arndt likes to call him. Quinn Hughes' personal assassin becomes Jack Rathbone's personal assassin. I love that. I love that idea.
Love the idea of that. And, you know, Shen's 31.
Yeah.
31 years old.
He's not that old.
A lot of, like, if I were to just not look it up and guess, I would have guessed 36, 37. Yep,
I would have guessed the same.
But man, 31, and it's about because he rebuilt his game
exactly
with the San Diego Gulls and Abbots,
which not a lot of people know about. So go ahead and tell that story.
So the way that, I mean, Shen was came in as a pretty high prospect. Obviously, a lot of expectations offensively for him as well. But, you know, then he fell out of the NHL. He wasn't good enough offensively to be an offensive defenseman. Fell out of the NHL, had to go to the AHL, really rebuilt his game there in the AHL to become this stay-at-home, tough defenseman that, you know, you could rely upon to be a depth player. And it got him his NHL job back. He got him his NHL job back with the Anaheim Ducks. He had then obviously moved on to the Vancouver Canucks to finish his season. And what has he done since then? Oh, nothing much. Just went on and won two Stanley Cups while playing as a seventh defenseman for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, yes, he makes a lot of sense to the Canucks at 31 years old. He's willing to drop the gloves. We saw him stick up for Quinn Hughes and Quinn Hughes' game. And it makes so much sense to me for him to be, because this is how I see the defense playing out. Nate Schmidt's going to get moved. I think we're at that point right now where Nate Schmidt is, I wouldn't say 100% going to be moved, but man, I'm pretty confident he is getting moved. Then they're going to need to find someone for Quinn Hughes to play with there. They already bought out Holtby to get some more money for this season to find that partner for Quinn Hughes. If they can find a guy in the $3 to $5 million range to play on the right side with Quinn Hughes, that makes a lot of sense. And then you can also bring back Hamonic and Shen. You have Hamonic and Shen as your 6-7 guys on the right side. You have Yolevi as kind of the 7-8 guy. The defense looks a lot different and a lot better with the addition of a guy like Shen to bring some depth. If you're able, I would love to see them go out and get Hamonic. I still think Hamonic makes a little bit more sense, but a little bit of competition between Hamonic and Shen might be nice. Like, hey, which one of you wants to go out and play with Jack Rathbun on that third pairing? You're going to play minutes. You're going to kill penalties. Both players do a very similar thing. And the thing that I like so much about Shen was what he was able to do with the Tampa Bay Lightning. When an injury did occur, he can play with any left shot defenseman that's offensive. And look at what the Canucks have on the left side.
All Quinn offensive.
Hughes, OEL, Jack Rathbun, all offensive guys. That makes a lot of sense as a stylistic fit with Luke Shen. If, let's just say that whoever Quinn Hughes' partner is gets injured and Hamnick's looking good with Rathbun, and Shen maybe just goes back and plays with Hughes for a handful of games. If it's Myers that goes down, Shen hops right into there too. I like the way that he fits with all of the Canucks' left shot defensemen.
I have to give you
probably would look good with Ole Yolevi too. Just saying, Yolevi's no, I'm just kidding. I won't go too much.
I'm glad you said you're kidding, because nobody looks good with Ole Yolevi. Come on,
like, my article that's going to come out might look good pretty soon in this offseason at some point. But Yolevi, I hope it convinces some people.
I hope it doesn't run, and I think I get to decide that.
Yeah, it's going
to
be on Daily Hive.
Daily Hive.
I'm Daily Hive's big rugby.
11 reasons Ollie O'Levy might be able to learn how to skate.
I'm back with Daily Hive potentially for the fall.
For the sevens.
Well. Rugby sevens again, yeah.
PJ can explain to you how rugby works.
Hey, man, it's easy. Rugby's easy. You throw the ball backwards, you kick it forwards, I don't know. You know what the funny thing about rugby is here, though? Like rugby's a fun sport to watch. The only part I don't really understand is, like, it's weird how they touch the ball down. But I guess it's like
when you score a try?
And it's, well, that's the thing. Okay, football, it's called a touchdown.
Yeah.
You don't touch the ball down. But in rugby, it's called a try. It's not called a touchdown, but you do touch the ball down.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. You think I invented
it? I think America's like ruined a lot of the sport. Like how did they come up with soccer as the name for football? Why is it not called football?
I'll call it football. Oh, because it's played with your feet. Right?
Oh, hey, the rest of the world calls it football because they kick around the ball with their feet. We're going to call it soccer instead.
And then we're going to invent a new sport called football where you use your feet like a very, very small portion of the time.
But for some reason, it's fine in the United States to call handball.
Yeah, interesting.
It's dumb. Anyways.
I guess there's a lot still that we have to get into.
Check the poll.
Check the poll question about Luke Shen.
People are very on board with it because I don't think Shen.
Let me just say.
Yeah.
A day after the market was criticized by Jake Virtanen's agent for being too negative, everybody's hyping up like a seventh D-man.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind getting into that in a little bit here. Maybe even no, like next.
Another episode. That's not for today. Okay. That is such stupidity coming from Jake Virtanen's agent. Like, it is just the stupidest thing. And even you know, he brings up Logan Mallou with Mark Bergevin and everything going on there. Next, Tony D'Angelo
just threw some fire at the Canadians for drafting him.
No way, really? What did he say?
I don't know. I just saw the headline, so it might not be that bad.
Just bring it up and look it up.
Let me get a poll question real quick.
Go ahead.
Do you want to bring the Canuck? Do you want Man, you worded this.
Do you want the Canucks to bring Luke Shen back?
This pissed me off how you worded this. Do you want to see the Canucks bring back Luke Shen?
Oh, real confusing.
That's wordy, man. You got long words.
Coming from you. Come on, long words in there now.
Bring and back.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you want to see the Canucks bring back Luke Shen? 86% of people saying yes. 8% of people saying no. And our lowest yet, since releasing a poll question with I'm Angry, only 6%.
Yeah,
are angry.
Because nobody, how can you be angry about Luke Shen coming back?
I know, this market's just so negative. How the 6% of people in that market.
That's who deserves all the attention in this market, for sure. The 6% that are always angry. Yeah.
Okay, more. Let's go. Lots of news. Let's go. Let's fire.
Yeah, what was the thing? Well, what did Trudeau say about Malu?
Come on, we got Canucks stuff, this is a podcast.
You look it up while I start talking, but you got to look that up. You can't just bring that up and not say it. That's like horrible listening. Just like me yelling at you is probably horrible listening for the people in traffic listening to this right now on their way home from work. But you're going to look that up. The other big thing going on right now.
His quote is deeply disappointed by the Canadian selection of Logan Mailloux.
Okay, so fair enough. I think he says
that it was a lack of judgment by the Canadians.
Yeah. Well, okay, fair enough. Maybe you didn't have to look that up.
Oh, yeah, because that was just game-changing.
That wasn't game-changing at all.
Audio.
Anyway.
Frank Saravalli on the show, but that was the best part of it right there.
Yeah. Should we just put featuring Justin Trudeau on the episode, featuring Frank Saravalli and featuring the Prime Minister? Yeah. Anyway, let's hop into it here. The other thing that happened today, Chris, the buyout for Braden Holtby. Now, I didn't get to talk to Ian about Braden Holtby, but the thing that we were talking about a lot, you and me, and just I was talking about this with other people as well, was the Canucks were trying very hard to move him, but they would have had to retain salary. The maximum that a team can retain is 50%. Now, the thinking is that teams probably wanted them to retain that much, but in an environment like this, and I know a lot of people are looking at it and saying, why did they buy him out? Like, why didn't they just make a team, or why didn't they just retain some salary and get an asset for him? The thing about this is they're saving $3.9 million on the cap this year. That's a pretty hefty chunk of change. Like that is good. When you're only going to be saving 2.15 if you retain, I'm sorry. Like, I know draft picks are valuable and I know whatever else you get back is potentially valuable. But right now in the flat cap environment and with how the Canucks are going all in, like they've made it clear they're going all in. The goal this year is to make the playoffs. They punted on last year, but this year they're right back in it. They want to make the playoffs. They want to contend for the Stanley Cup eventually. They want to get there. So when I look at this deal, that $3.9 million, that's going to be valuable for them. That's what they're looking at, and they're just looking at this from a pure, we want to win now, and we want to go all in perspective.
Man, this team is so all in for this season. Jim Benning has gotten his way.
Aggressive Jim.
Aggressive Jim has gotten his way.
And the
way.
Checkbooks are out. Like, think of how much money they've spent.
Yeah. It's not even just on the ice, but bringing in the Sedins is not cheap.
Yeah.
Ian Clark's deal obviously isn't cheap. Travis Green gets more than we expected. He gets his whole coaching staff. They bring in Brad Shaw. Like,
Brad Shaw's not cheap.
They've pushed to make this team a lot better this year, and they have improved a lot.
Yeah, they have.
Man,
I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but a lot of people still having the discussion of should they have waited till that 2-year mark? Should they have punted on this year as well? I'm sorry, I said it before and I'll say it again. You're starting to lose that locker room if you come in this year with Olli Juolevi on your third pairing. And I know it's not all about Juolevi. That was just an example. Yeah, that's just an example. If you come in this year with another dog poop team.
Dog poop team.
I didn't swear.
Is that the name of the episode? Dog poop team?
No. Because people are going to think we're trashing the Canucks like the negative media we are.
That's true.
If you come in this year with another piss poor team, dog poop. If you come in with another team like that, you're going to be, and I know the team like that shirts could mean something else after the last year that the Canucks just had seventh in the North Division. If you come in again, you're going to start losing people in that locker room. You're going to start losing Elias Pettersson. You're going to start losing JT Miller. JT Miller actually losing, like literally losing him, but losing the buy-in, I think, from the players would have started to happen. But look, Bo Horvat's not getting any younger. Played 500 NHL games. Like, you don't think he wants to start winning? They got a taste of the playoffs. This young core got a taste of the playoffs, and I think the hardest part about winning in the playoffs, Chris, is knowing if your young core can do it. And I think for a team like Toronto, and I've said this before, their young core hasn't shown that. So if I'm a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, which I'm definitely not, I'm a lot more worried about my team succeeding in the playoffs than I am right now if I'm a Canucks fan. You saw what they could do in the bubble last year. I'm of the belief that that wasn't a fluke. And I think with the top nine that they're going into this year, I think they actually can compete this year.
And if they're able to make the right moves here with Nate Schmidt, the defense can get better.
I don't know where if I heard this somewhere or if this just came to my mind, but you know, I've talked about Radko Gudas before. I like the idea of bringing him in. He was a free agent last time I wanted them to get him, but now he's signed. If you move Nate Schmidt in exchange for Gudas, you're probably getting an asset back on top of that. Like, I don't think you do Gudas for Schmidt one for one. And then the thing is, if you get Gudas, you probably don't still get Shen, or do you hope Gudas can play first pair minutes with Hughes? Like,
that's what you're going to have to move
Schmidt
for.
That's a huge question mark.
Even like today, and I've floated this idea in the past, if Schmidt is staying, maybe he's the one that plays with Quinn Hughes. That's a very offensive pairing. But it's going to be so hard to find. Like, Frank brought up CC as an option.
Yeah.
Depending on what CC's making, I don't know. To me, it's not... It's that type of player, but I don't think CeCe's the guy that I want for him. But it's that type of player. But man, the right defense market right now for free agency is so slim. Like, Shen's one of like the top, you know, probably 10, 15 right shot defensemen available. And we're talking about a guy who probably plays in your 6-7 spot. There's just not right shot defensemen aside from Dougie Hamilton out there that are going to be good. And I don't think the Canucks are going to be able to swing Dougie Hamilton, even though some Twitter folk are still hoping for it. But I think it is possibly going to have to come from a trade, and I don't know if that's a trade that's Schmidt straight up for the guy who plays with Hughes. I don't see that happening. But if they can parlay Nate Schmidt into some picks, and the picks are what you want to deal, or heck, man, would it shock you to see the Canucks move more draft picks just to get, like, whatever they move Schmidt for? It wouldn't shock me to see the Canucks peddle more draft picks to find a guy who fits with Hughes.
Yeah,
because they're already so invested in, and like, you know, I like it a lot, man. I'm excited that the Canucks are going this direction and making this push to be a playoff team, be a contender, because it's just not something that we've been able... You and I have been covering the team for... I think I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. You're 3 or 4 years yourself. You know, it's not like we've had a good run yet. Like, the best we've seen this team was in the playoff bubble when they made the run and lost to Vegas, obviously. And to me, this team that we have right now in Vancouver is already, I think it's better. Like, would you not say that the Canucks team this day is better than what they did when they made a run against Las Vegas?
Yes, I agree.
I think this team's better, and I think that they can make a good run through the regular season, get this team to gel together, have this morale of the locker room be completely flipped from what it was last year. And I like that Jim Benning's being aggressive. I know that they're sacrificing a lot of what the future is, right? Like, the OEL deal hurts the future. Holtby hurts the next year with the bio. But man, like, I'm excited to be excited about this team. Like, I'm jacked up that this team's going to be a lot more fun to watch. I'm jacked up to see their top nine looks like three lines that I'm excited to see skate forward. I'm excited to see Pod Colson not be forced into a top six role. Hoglander potentially dropping down to a third line role where he's going to get easy matchups as the leading goal scorer at 5-on-5 last year for the Canucks. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about what this team's able to do next year. You have an emerging goalie like Thatcher Demko. Mikey's coming in at some point. Jack Rathbone's here now. Like, why not make a push with these guys? Like, why not? I know that there's a lot of people that are still staying pretty negative about Jim Benning and what he's doing, but he told us he was going to be aggressive. I was worried when he said he was going to be aggressive. I think some of the trades that he has worried me a little bit, but overall, I've been pretty happy with his offseason so far. If this Canucks team goes in and goes on a playoff run, like a deep playoff run, you know, Jim Benning's going to be getting a lot of props for what he did. And if they don't, he's fired. So, you know, the people that want Benning gone, it might happen this year. The people that are fine with Jim Benning or think that he's done a good job this offseason, if he makes him to the playoffs, I think he's got to still like win a round for this to be a successful offseason, because, man, has he gone out and tried to do a lot of very aggressive things like he said he would do.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some news around the league. The Hurricanes are going to be signing Tony D'Angelo, reported by Frank Saravalli.
Wow.
And there is interest in Jake Virtanen around the league as well. I think it was also the Hurricanes that were linked to him. I don't know if exactly which team. You know what? Yeah, David Pagnotta of the fourth period. Jake Virtanen has drawn interest from multiple teams, including Carolina. He'll have options after being bought out by Vancouver. So, Tony D and Jake teaming up in Carolina potentially. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I know there's the investigation ongoing, but I think a lot of people, because, okay, I saw someone, first of all, there was people, including Jake, in trade proposals right up to the end of the season, okay? Without those allegations, without them, okay, if those hadn't even happened, I still think with Jake's contract, you're looking at negative value. Nobody wants him in a trade at that contract. And I think they still would have bought him out. Like, look at his production before the allegations came to light. And I just think, like...
Have you seen, like, from the site that... I don't know the name of the Instagram page.
Yes.
I get it. More women have come out and said it. So it's not just... Like, I know that you've mentioned, if we're just talking about the hockey, it would have happened anyways, but... Where this investigation has led, it's such a no-brainer to just move on.
It's pretty unfortunate, but I just,
all alleged. Word we have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all from that Instagram page,
It's nice that we can move on from this and talk in hockey, but, you know, on a bigger scale as well, I hope that there's some justice served here in the end if whatever comes from this situation off the ice as well.
Yeah.
Because it's horrendous. Allegedly, it's horrendous. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it's tough stuff to read, regardless.
You can see it. Really was.
It is tough stuff to read.
So let's move on to something else. Just like a quick little update. We just got this from PJ as well. Brogan Rafferty will not be speaking to the Vancouver Canucks at all.
Yeah, that was actually the verbiage used. He's not speaking to the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. I wonder why.
It's gone through a tough breakup here.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, he's got him blocked on all of his social medias.
Yeah, jeez.
not really, but maybe he does. I don't know, actually. But I mean, never really worked out with Brogan Rafferty, obviously. You know, it's also like, we don't have to spend a lot of time on the Rafferty stuff, to be honest, but I want to ask about Pettersson a little bit here.
Okay, so 21 hours at the time of this recording till Pettersson can sign an offer sheet. Rick Dhaliwal of Donnie and Dolly, the team on check, is reporting that the Canucks are worried about an offer sheet.
The quote from Rick is, talking to people in the last 48 hours, the Canucks are really concerned about an offer sheet for Elias Pettersson.
I'm not trying to doubt Rick's reporting at all.
I think...
Rick talks to a lot of agents.
Listen, I know Rick talks to a lot of agents, but like... A lot of people on Canucks Twitter are scared because he changed his Instagram description or whatever the hell his bio
was. What did he change it to?
I think he just took Canucks out of
it. Oh, Pettersson. I thought you were about Rick. I'm like, why are people concerned about Rick?
Yeah, Rick's bio on Instagram now is just... He changed it on a Friday night.
Jeez. The thing that you're referring to, Elias Pettersson, took out his profile picture from Instagram that had him in the Canucks jersey, got rid of Vancouver.
Non-story, though.
I know it is. But he did. It was a calculated decision to take it out of the Twitter and the Instagram bio.
He knows what he's doing.
I wonder. I wonder if the agents told him to do that.
No.
Well, you never know.
I don't CAA? Think agents are.
Dude, they represent Harry Styles. Did you know that? Harry Styles, Quinn Hughes, and Elias. You know who Harry Styles is, right?
Yeah, I know what he is. What he does.
Yeah. You know he's a singer, One Direction.
He was in One Direction.
Yeah,
Kiss You, great song by One Direction.
Yes, absolutely. We should close out with some One Direction today, I think.
Well, let me get my Bluetooth plugged in then to the
old... Yeah, we'll do that. But we probably should close out. It's getting really hot in here. The last thing that we'll talk about, Connor Garland contract. I think we're both in agreement that it's a good contract. 4 years, or 5 years, $4.95 million, I think is the exact number.
Yep.
Backloaded contract in the last 3 years of that deal. He will make $6 million. Again, for those that don't know, that doesn't affect the cap. Cap hit is going to be $4.95 million every year. No trade protection on that deal, which I think is a massive massive win for everybody. I think people are looking at that contract and saying that it's not filled with bonuses or trade protection. It's a nice deal.
How many of these deals are like, that Jim Benning has signed, it's like the ones that I would expect that would have no moves don't get them, and the ones that I don't expect do get them. Like, how did Jay Beagle... Louis Erickson have no trades in their deals, and then Bo Horvat and Connor Garland don't.
Yeah, it's funny. Okay, I gotta say, like,
how does Myers get one and then Horvat doesn't?
I don't know, man, because he's not a free agent. I gotta say, so this Connor Garland deal, I think everybody likes it. I think it'd be similar results if we put out, do you like the contract, similar to Luke Shen? But one of our listeners, Leo Reyes, he was tweeting about this a couple days ago. I saw him tweeting about it. He said, "I like Garland. Everybody likes Garland. But please don't make the same mistake as Brandon Sutter and sign him to a deal before he plays a game with the Canucks." And Connor Garland's a different player. Like, as Saravalli said, he brings his lunch pail with him every day. Like, you know, his work ethic is great. You saw Arizona fans tweeting.
Frank said he's bringing a lunch pail and a shovel.
Yeah, he's ready to go. You saw Arizona fans tweeting about it. They were not happy that they lost this guy for that. It was similar to how Canucks fans reacted when Toffoli got away. But at least with Arizona, they traded for him, right?
I'm surprised you're able to find Arizona fans.
Yeah. You just look on the Arizona beat reporter. He was the one that tweeted it.
He's like, I've spoken to three fans. They're all mad. That's about half the fan base. Fans,
they're all mad. Don't knock the Coyotes too much. Come on.
Paul Bissonnette's not happy.
I think he's a Coyotes guy or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
He's the color guy for them.
Is he? On the TV broadcast?
On the radio.
Really? Wow. Okay. Didn't know that. Moving right past that, Connor Garland. I don't know. I like the deal. I don't think there's actually a risk of him coming in and just not performing, Louis Eriksson-ing it. As our friend Tony Gallagher says, it's like Louis just forgot how to play.
Gosh, yeah.
Or he checked with his banker.
You know what? Man, I'm going to reach out to Tony.
We got
to
get Tony on
Tony's take on what's been going on lately.
Yeah, we've
been pretty positive about it. I wonder what Tony's thinking.
Oh, man. I love B-Mac.
We're
going
to talk to Tony soon.
We need to get B-Mac, too. That'd be a fun one.
B-Mac would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Why not Boulevard of Broken Dreams?
Yours isn't bad, actually. Your Tony's not bad. What I want to quickly get into with the Garland deal is, yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. You get him for under five. Listen, I was kind of projecting that he might be in the lower parts of four, but I think seeing the Sam Bennett deal, that one, like, that really set the market for me. And obviously the Canucks were in conversations with him making more than that, right? Sam Bennett coming in, was it 4 years at 4.4? You're getting, I think, a better player.
Oh, absolutely.
Garland for sure. Yeah. And I like the deal. The fact that they were getting him under five, I'm happy with. Like, I think I wrote about it in Canucks Army last week, they might be able to get him for under four. So I was very off with projections.
Yeah, there's no way that was
I haven't seen Garland play enough to understand what he can do. But I've been watching him a little bit lately. And I've been spending a lot more time with OEL lately. Can I quickly just say something about OEL?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, his defensive game isn't going to be something that Canucks fans are super excited about. But he can still snap the puck, man. Like, he can really, he can snap the puck, make really good passes still. Like, that's something that is going to be, you know, beneficial for the Canucks, is that he is going to be the primary puck mover on that pairing. You know, I think he's going to play with Tyler Myers. And then that's going to be a pairing in the defensive zone right there, man. That's going to be something. That's going to be like, I don't know what that's going to be like. But he can still snap the puck. Like, he can snap the puck up to guys. He still gives good passes, gets a lot of his shots on net, and a lot of his pucks find the back of the net because he's got a wrist shot that's accurate. And those type of point shots that you get with a lot of screens, if you can find holes, you can get goals. That's a good little rhyme there.
Daniel Sedin,
you can find holes, you can get goals. I'm saving that one.
Get it tattooed on you.
Maybe not, but
Daniel Sedin was talking about OEL on the radio on Sportsnet 650. But
yeah, I followed up Daniel on 650 as a guest.
Very nice. Wow,
not a big deal.
Little flex there. I like that.
Little flex.
I like it. What was I saying? Oh yeah, Daniel Sedin. He was talking about OEL and he said, you know, I've already talked to Oliver. He's taken ownership for the seasons that he's had and he's ready to bounce back. And I wonder, because we know he and Tocchet didn't get along. I wonder what it looks like for OEL to bounce back. Like, what does a good season from OEL look like next season?
Man, I think OEL can still get 7 to 10 5-on-5 goals from the back end and still be like a 30-plus point guy.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't think that's out of the realm.
I don't think so either, but that pairing that you're going to see with him and Myers, like,
they better be controlling play.
The thing is, like, it's depending on who's going to play with Quinn Hughes, but that might be the pairing that's starting in the offensive zone with, like, the Lotto line a lot. Like, when they do have an offensive zone faceoff, it might not be Quinn Hughes out there.
Well, it might be if he's with Schmidt.
That's true, too. That's what's going to be, like,
I think. But you also are okay with Schmidt and Hughes feasting on those matchups with Horvat, like those easier matchups, because now Horvat's going to get those, I think. Well, you know what? We got to talk to Travis at training camp, because if you're Travis right now,
there's a lot of questions for Travis. Well, this is a very different lineup,
and,
man.
You know, Travis likes to keep his cards pretty close to his chest, but, you know, at the last training camp, he was straight up with us. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm going to match the Lotto line, because I did that in the playoffs last year and it worked. And that was the plan. Then he had to kind of change on the fly when they got off to a slow start, and What a gong show last season was. But anyway, I'm interested to see how Travis kind of approaches this. Is he going to use the Lotto line? Like, who's getting softer matchups, the Lotto line or the Horvat line? Because I think it's got to be the Lotto line, because the Lotto line can go toe-to-toe with any top line and still control the shot share and the goal share. at their best, that's what the lotto line can do. They can, yeah. they can play against anybody.
Hey, we were kind of touching on it with Garland here, but I want to get your opinion on how that second line kind of shapes out, because I think we have different looks at it. Because I saw you agreeing with
Harmon,
something that Harmon said.
Yeah.
I'm on the different end of the spectrum on that one.
Okay, you give yours first.
So I think it's going to be Pearson, Horvat, Garland.
Okay.
I know Garland can play both wings. It's not something that I'm just not aware of. I know that he can play both wings, but I see Travis Green wanting Horvat to be with the veteran Pearson a little bit more and with Garland.
I get what you're saying.
And get before I finish, I know that Höglander was a better line mate for Horvat. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that Höglander assisted on more, scored more goals assisted by, and was a better player alongside Horvat than Pearson was, but I just think the way that Green coaches, the way that he's used Pearson and Horvat in the past, I don't think he splits that up. I think he keeps Pearson with Horvat.
Okay.
So I'll just say my third line then is Höglander, Dickinson, Pod Colson.
Okay, I agree with you, but I think that's a massive waste of, because Dickinson doesn't have a ton of offense. That's a massive waste of Pod Colson and Höglander.
Ooh, I don't know.
That's a massive waste, and I'll tell you why. If you want to start putting Dick... Okay, so the way I look at it in terms of matchups is you've got the Lotto line playing against other teams' top lines. Second line goes out, you're putting out the Dickinson line to match up against them. And then that Horvat line is just feasting. Like, you're looking at a dominant, dominant line there. Like, they're gonna get so much offense. Mm-hmm. Now, Pearson doesn't give you that. What Pearson does give you is very, very solid two-way play. Now, we know Nils Höglander still makes some mistakes. I don't think that's going to change going into next year. I think it's going to be less and less as he continues to play, but he still makes mistakes in the defensive zone. He just gets a longer leash because of how good he is offensively. I think to put him in the best position to succeed and Horvat in the best position to succeed, you want him on a second line with Connor Garland. And then your third line is Pearson, Dickinson, Pod Colson, because we know what Pod Colson can do two-way. That third line is a serious two-way threat. I just think with Höglander, it's not as much. You want Pearson there. You want Pearson to be able to play
guy.
In the defensive zone and be able to finish.
He's going to score goals when he goes to the net.
Exactly.
And he scores goals when he's with good passers. Pod Colson's a good playmaker.
Yeah.
You know that. Yeah, I see where that comes from with the logic. And I think when I look at the combinations, I like that one more. Like, mm-hmm. I like Höglander more with Horvat and Garland. But I don't think that's where Green's going to go with it. That's what I'm kind of saying here. Like, I like that.
It all depends on how he matches them up. And I think if you have Jason Dickinson, you're not using him in an offensive role. That's a huge waste of Jason Dickinson.
But it's also a chance where if you are going to match the Horvat line still, and Horvat's going to play a lot of minutes. Okay?
He is, yep.
He's not going to play less minutes than Dickinson because yep. Dickinson's getting a matchup. Horvat's still going to match up against other good lines
yes.
a lot, which is why I think that you might still see that Horvat line used to match up just simply because they can outscore now with Garland on that line.
Yeah.
That you can expect them to outscore the other team's top or second line. And that's why I like the weak matchups for Pod Colson, Höglander, and Dickinson on the third line.
I just don't like Dickinson there because he's just not an offensive player.
But Dickinson's a guy who you look at where a lot of his offense does come from. It's right around the net. So,
yeah.
like, he's the type of guy who can just kind of be a you know, what did you call it? A dog poop disturber? So he's a dog
yeah,
poop
dog
disturber?
Poops. Yeah.
So that's what he could be around the net when you let Pod Colson and Höglander do their work. And I'd love to see those two guys on a line together just because of the similarities and how they play the game, their aggressiveness, their playmaking, their quick decision making. I want that pairing to be together. And I know that Dickinson's not going to be the offensive guy that everybody wants him to see and score, you know, 20 goals this year. But I think that there's enough good pace play in Dickinson's game that he fits with those two guys. And that third line, if they're getting matchups against other teams' third lines, they're going to feast. So there's going to be a line that's going to be able to get after it for the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm excited because it's great to have a conversation about a top nine. When the hell have we not had, like, we've talked about this about top six before.
And Jimmy Vesey. Yeah. Talked about Jimmy Vesey.
But we've talked about, like, the top six of the Canucks and how they should play those guys and how they match up well and what we like about it. But we haven't talked about a top nine since we've been covering this team, since we've been doing this podcast. So the chance that we've got to have it now, I love that for the Canucks. And I know there's going to be a lot more topics, and I'm excited because now we, you know, I feel like we could go for another 30 minutes talking about more topics, but we'll save that for
Saturday,
the end of the week as well.
Saturday, we'll have a good episode again.
I think, this will be one of the last episodes in July. It's also one of the last times for you to sign up for the Patreon. Patreon weekly episodes where we're going to dive into a bunch of stuff. And we've got our giveaway going on right now. Man, I think we're one more Patreon subscriber away from us doubling the prize.
Yeah.
I think we have 9 new Patreon subscribers in the month of July. Appreciate everyone who's been jumping on. You can sign up at patreon.com/CanucksConvo. Bonus episodes where we break down Dave's baseball game, which his team just got wrecked.
Yeah, it was a tough game.
Absolutely wrecked. It was tough to watch.
Anyway.
It felt like I was watching an MLB team play against one of those child teams from the bench warmers that played against those three guys. Your team looked like a 12-year-old team on the field.
I'm the oldest player on my team.
And you are?
Yeah, we're in a U26 league, and I'm 21. I'm the oldest player on my team.
Man, I was sitting there in the stands. I was like, you got to try and sneak me in here.
Yeah, I was
you
thinking,
sneak me in
I
here.
Am 12.
Yeah.
Speaking of the bench warmers.
Yeah, I'm 21.
Yeah, that would have been good. But, yeah.
Sorry, the thing I wanted to bring up about the Patreon. Yes. So if you don't win the giveaway this month, if you join the hero tier, you're entered in. We do giveaways every month. We give away 2 packages a month to a different hero tier subscriber. So if you stay on the Patreon, you're going to win something eventually. But right now, yeah, the giveaway is available for $5 and $10 tier subscribers.
And we appreciate the help on the Patreon, the support on the Patreon a ton. I'll tell you, man, if the Patreon goes up enough, maybe we will get that Carol Baskins intro. We want our Patreon to be introduced by Carol Baskins saying, hello, you do it. You're better than I am at it.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Welcome to the Canucks Convo.
Welcome Patreon. To Canucks That's Conversations.
But it's like Patreon. $600 damn bucks.
Yeah, it's so expensive. For we'll Carol see. Baskin. That's probably not the best use of our funds, but we'll see.
There's some good ones on Cameo. I'd love to get a little.
Yeah,
intro
we could get a Gilbert Godfrey. He's on there too.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, well, might have to get him.
There's definitely some interesting ones. I wouldn't mind getting like a wrestler.
Look at
like
me just wrestler. Busting out all the impressions, eh? On
yeah,
this episode, I did Tony G, Carol Baskin.
I forget his name now.
I used to have a really good Gary Bettman impression, but then my voice got deeper, and I was listening to an old episode of ours. Like, I know you don't hit puberty when you're 20, but my voice got deeper since then.
Yeah,
like I listen to old episodes. My voice got deeper.
We did this
since
a while
then.
Ago. We listened to an old episode and we're like, listen how fast we're talking. We're
yeah,
like
and we
so
were
nervous.
Scared. Yeah. Yeah, especially I was intimidating
first,
you.
The first episode. Yeah, definitely. The first episode we did together, episode 61 at BCIT.
Yeah.
We're just like talking so fast, trying to get everything to word in. Like we just talk really fast and it was so bad.
It was weird to listen to.
Yeah, it was like, it doesn't even sound like us.
No,
so
it doesn't.
Please don't go back and listen.
Yeah,
to it. Episode
bad.
61 is the only episode of Canucks Combo that didn't get over 1,000 listens.
Is that the first time I was on?
Yes.
That's so funny.
It's the only episode in history that hasn't got... Hopefully people don't go back and listen to
in
it.
In history? But. Like your first episode got over 1,000 listens.
Well, it's in you and like...
Oh, in you and I.
My history.
Oh, okay.
We've had a couple.
Okay.
We had a lot under 1,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, what? You had like your first episode... I was like, if you started with 1,000, that's pretty intense.
But for people that tuned in, hopefully you enjoy. If this is your first time hearing a regular episode, because a lot of people tuned in to hear the prospects, appreciate you coming here. I think that this is the best Canucks podcast out there.
Yeah, I can't disagree.
I think we're going to crush it in the month of August as well. We're just going to crank things up even more. We had an awesome weekend covering the draft.
We have some fun ideas for the training camp in Abbotsford. Now,
yes, we weren't able to do it last year.
We weren't
year, but...
because, you know, we wanted to respect everything. You know, vaccines weren't really available at all. COVID was, you know, starting to go back up and they asked us to wear masks in the arena, and we wanted to do...
Plus they're all about 20 feet apart. Like, I know it's 6 feet, but the way that we were seated...
Yeah, we were very far apart, and we didn't want to go sit together and start doing it. But, you know, I think there's going to be an option for Abbotsford training camp. I think we're going to get a lot of stuff going on. And I think, like, I don't want to hint too much, but I've got more than a few ideas, because there's going to be fans at the training camp in Abbotsford, so we might even do some meet and greet. Like, we'll see... what we end up doing. We'll see. We'll see. It's very, very early stages, but we have a lot of ideas. If you haven't already, hit subscribe. Go leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, and we never talk about reviews, but yeah, we haven't had one in a while.
Yeah. Go leave
Appreciate
us a 5-star review.
Appreciate the reviews from everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just quickly thing on Apple. All you do, search up Canucks Convo, click it, tap it, review it.
Good to go.
Get out of there. But hey, the Patreon, the reason we're able to possibly do some live stuff from there was being able to buy this Rodecaster here.
Yeah.
You know, free plug for Rodecaster, excellent podcasting device, and it'll be able to help pay for some of the gas as well. The people that support the Patreon, we really appreciate it. And like I said, I think we're only one more away from getting the 10, then we'll double the prize.
Absolutely.
We'll have 2 prizes, and we appreciate it. I think the Patreon's a lot of fun. We like to have some fun on there as well with our Patreon, you know, chatting with people on the page as well. So patreon.com/CanucksConvo. We'll be giving away a package if you get on there in the month of July if you sign up. So August is going to be a tough month for for the Patreon, because nobody's going to be signing up, because we already got a lot of new ones in July here. So, yeah, just appreciate everyone. I'll let you close this out here, Quads.
Yeah, our thanks to Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff for joining us, and make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. For Chris Faber, my name is David Quadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to the Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.